There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you are not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go. We're at the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. Welcome to a special weekend edition, podcast 439, July 4th. 2010. On this weekend's special edition, of course, we have to say happy birthday to America, and of course, a fantastic young GP2 winner and driver, Marcus Ericsson. Nasser, introduce this interview.
Yes, sir. Thank you, and thanks also to Miss Amanda Hunt for helping making these GP3 interviews possible. Marcus Ericsson is another young, talented driver whose career I've been following, and for a vested interest, you know, I was a huge, huge Ronnie Peterson fan. And Sweden has not had a Grand Prix winner since he lost his life, unfortunately, many years ago. So he's on my radar, and he's very good. Marcus Ericsson is a young man from Kumla in Sweden. Past Sunday, won his first GP2 race in Valencia. Currently, he is 11th in the championship and is racing with David Sears' Supernova team, which is based in Lotus Country, Norfolk, England. Last year, Marcus was Japanese F3 champion, and I asked him in this interview why did he go there, because he had raced 1 year, and the answer is very interesting. So he won the Japanese F3 championship last year and also started the prestigious Macau F3 race from pole position, where all the top talented F3 drivers go. In 2008, he was fifth in the British F3 and won the Formula BMW UK in 2007. Marcus is managed by Kenny Bragg, the ex-Indy 500 winner, and wants to be the first Swedish F1 winner since the 1978 Austrian Grand Prix, when the late Ronnie Peterson won in his Lotus. So it's been a long time. And ironically, the very next race was the Dutch Grand Prix, which was won by his teammate Mario Andretti, and that remains to this day last race won by an American driver. So change has to come soon, both for Sweden and USFA. My thanks to Marcus for his time. For more info on his career, please visit his website, www.marcuserickson.com, and the name is spelled MarcusErickson. Thank you. Okay, folks, I'm here with a young gentleman who hopefully will be the next super Swede, Mr. Marcus Ericsson. Welcome to F1 Weekly. How are you today?
I'm good, thanks. It's nice to be down in Barcelona for the first weekend, so I'm all fine.
Okay, I've been following your career since you were in Formula BMW, but before that you did a lot of karting in your country. Tell us a little bit about your karting life.
Yeah, I was doing my first years in Sweden with quite good success and won a couple of championships. And the last couple of years in go-karts I did in European go-karting, mostly in Italy. I managed to finish third in the Italian Open Masters, which is the world hardest championship, and I also won the Nordic Championship in Sweden, at the race in Sweden. So yeah, it was a good couple of years, and it was good for, you know, karting is the best school for a racing driver in the world, so I'm very happy that I did it.
Okay. Now, once upon a time you were leading a race in Sweden and dropped out later in the race, but somebody was watching you. Tell us the story, please.
Yeah, it was the Nordic Championships the year after I won in the senior category, and I was I'd won all the heats and the pre-final, and I was leading the big final, and then after 28 out of 30 laps, my engine blew up, so it was a bit of a shame. But there on the side was Kenny Breck, who was watching and looking out for new talents, and he saw my performance and thought it was really good, and we had a chat, and then we set up a meeting, and we went on from there.
Okay. Now, when the car stopped 2 laps to go, did you cry?
Maybe I did, yeah. I was very disappointed, but still I showed what I could do, so it was all right.
Okay, now let me ask you a question. Sebastian Vettel keeps saying, I don't need a manager because I can get to the track by myself. So what does Kenny Bragg bring to you as a manager?
He brings a lot, especially in the beginning of my career. With all the experience, he helped me to learn, to understand the technology and how a racing car works, and also the small driving details, and of course the sponsorship, which is so important. Without Kenny and the other parts of my management, I would not be able to do this racing. He have helped me to find all my sponsors and all the money needed, so without him I would not be where I am today. So I'm forever thankful for that.
Kenny Bragg, very well known in the US. Is he based in America now or Sweden?
No, he's actually based in the UK at the moment. So he moved there, I think, 2 years ago. So he's living there at the moment.
Okay. Is he still playing the guitar?
Yeah, he is. He's really good, actually. So it's he's a really good guitar player.
Well, next time you see him, tell him to play Johnny Guitar for you. Okay?
Okay, I will do that, yeah.
Okay. When you went to your England, which is the center of motor racing, I understand you were with Fortec team, right? Mr. Dutton? How was that? What do you think of Mr. Dutton? He bought me some drinks last night. This guy's crazy, man.
Yeah, Richard is a really nice guy. My first 2 years in motor racing was with Fortec Motorsports, and straight out the first year we won the championship, and in the second year we had a very good year in Formula 3 in Britain. So, I mean, he's done a lot for me, Richard, and he have great people working in his team, and the Fortec Motorsport is a big family, so I'm really, really pleased that I could do my first 2 years of motor racing with them, and I still have a good relationship with Fortec and especially Richard. So he's a very good guy.
Okay, now when you won the Formula BMW Championship UK in your first year, how big did your head get? Did you say right away, man, I'm the next Ronnie Peterson?
No, I wouldn't say that, because Formula BMW is such, you know, compared to what I'm doing now, it's such a low level. So I found out now that you need to learn a lot of things to be successful, you know. And for my BMW, I won because I was talented and I had the opportunity and I had a great car, you know. But when you come up from Formula BMW to Formula 3 and then to GP2, your talent is the same as everyone else, more or less. And you need to work this extra bit, and you need to focus this extra bit, and you need to do all these details a little bit better than everybody else, because everyone else is as talented as you. So I think that's the difference, and you need to work really, really hard, and I've learned that without working hard you will not get all the way, and that's what I'm doing at the moment. So
I hope I have the year right. I think you gave yourself a very nice 17th birthday present in Scotland. Tell us about that.
Yes. I probably was 17. Yeah, it was 17. Yeah. It was the last race of the season in Formula BMW, and it was in Knockhill, a small track up in Scotland, and I had a good weekend. I won actually both races and secured the championship then. Actually, the last six races, I won five of them, so it was really good end of the year in Formula BMW, and the season just ended perfectly.
When you moved from karting to Formula BMW, what was the big surprises for you from karting to car racing?
I think one of the biggest thing is that you need to understand the downforce and you need to trust the downforce. In go-karts, you just have the tires and the mechanical grip. In the Formula cars, you need to, the quicker you go, the more downforce you get, and you need to understand that and trust that. And I think that's the thing that a lot of people struggle with, and so did I in the beginning of the tests, you know. But when I got used to it, it was getting there, and I, for the start of the season, I was ready for it, you know.
Okay, now that you've made that transition, what's the best way to understeer and all this downforce of a car when you're coming from karting? What's your advice to young karters?
No, I mean, it's to be very, very interested in the technology and this side, because that's how you understand it, you know. You need to understand the downforce and how it's working. You need to understand what's happening, you know. And I think that's a thing that's a bit maybe underestimated, but to become a good racing driver, and especially if you want to be a Formula 1 driver, you need to be very good on the technical side and you need to really understand what's happening. You know, you don't have to be like an engineer. You know, I don't say that, but you need to understand what's happening, and I think that's a key thing, because then you get understanding, and then you can put that in the racing car, and you can understand what's going to happen. You know,
jump from Formula BMW to F3. What was the big surprise there?
It was just that a lot more downforce, and you need to even more bring the speed, you know, into the corners, and then of course also you in Formula 3 it's like the small Formula 1, you know, you can develop the car a lot, and you need to work very closely with the team and push the team forward, you know. And in the beginning of the Formula 3 career, it's always difficult because you don't have so much experience, and you really need to develop the car all the time in Formula 3, which is great because it teaches you a lot as a racing driver.
Okay, when you went to F3, did you feel the depth of competition also get more stronger?
I would say yes. In Formula BMW, we were maybe 3, 4, 5 drivers, which was really good. In F3, there was 10 of us, or 8, 10 of us, which was really good. And the year I did Formula British F3 in 2008 was a very strong year. We was current F1 driver Al-Ghazari won it. It was Oliver Turvey second. Red Bull reserve driver Brendan Hartley was third, and Sergio Perez in Adax was fourth, and I myself was fifth. So I mean, top five that year was extremely good. So I think the competition was very, very, very tough. Yes.
Yeah, top five in your rookie in British F3 is very good and impressive. What was the best race? What are the best moments you have from your British F3 season?
From my first season in British F3, I think maybe my best race was in Rockingham, where I started, I think, 7th or 8th, and it was damp conditions, and I drove my way up to 2nd, and I was, yeah, if I had a couple of more laps, I would have closed up to the first position as well, but unfortunately, that was not the case, but that was probably the best race of that year.
Okay, now I've got to tell you, I'm going to give credit to your management team, because I've been following motor racing for a long time, and when talented drivers come, like yourself, I take a lot of interest in, you know, what they're doing. When you signed up to go Japanese F3, I really said, man, that's a very, very good move, especially how your season went in British F3. So tell us how that decision was made.
As you say, I think a lot of people was questioning why we did this move, because it's not a usual thing to do if you have the budget and if you have the sponsors, you know. It's usually if you're struggling with the economy, you go there. But we thought that after my first year in British F3, I was not really ready for it, you know. I had only done BMW 1 year, and I was in British F3 2008. I was really maybe the quickest one, or one of the quickest guys, but I didn't score a single win, and I did too many mistakes. You know, if I was good in the qualifying, I was bad in the race, and then the opposite. So I was a bit too much all over the place and doing too much mistakes. So we figured out that, you know, we need to do something different to make me grow up and make me take care of myself, you know, and that would help the racing as well. So we looked at different options, and this one came up, and we thought, you know, this is just the perfect thing to do, because to live as 18-year-old on your own in the other side of the world, in a country like Japan, which is so different to what I'm used to, was going to be a big challenge, and sure it was.
Do you speak any Japanese?
Not really, but I could speak a little bit, like konnichiwa and genki and all these, you know, phrases, but not really, I wouldn't say. It's very difficult.
Was it a good learning experience as far as, apart from in your personal life, to be in such a different culture, such a different environment?
Yeah, it was very, very good, and it was very tough as well, because mentally it was, you know, you were a lot on your own, and, you know, it was a very big time difference to Europe. But I mean, I'm extremely happy that I did it, and I learned so much in 1 year. It was not possible, you know, I didn't think it was possible. So for me, it was the perfect thing to do.
How was the depth of competition in Japanese series?
It was not as hard as in Europe or in Britain, I would say, maybe, but the top guys in Japanese F3 is as good as the top guys in British or Euro F3, you know. I think just the difference is that when the Japanese drivers come to Europe, it's very different for them, like when we go to Japan, and of course they're gonna struggle because it's completely different lifestyle and everything. And I think probably the Japanese drivers is a bit underestimated, because to beat the Japanese guys on their home tracks and in their home country is bloody difficult, I would say.
So what's the choice now, sushi or Swedish meatballs?
It's a difficult one. I love sushi and I love Swedish meatballs, so I would take both, you know, different place.
Okay. Yeah, good to be diversified. Okay, now you're in GP2. Before we talk about GP2, you know, you mentioned that when you went to Japan, you were looking at other options. I was very surprised with under Kenny Bragg management, even though going to Japan was a great decision, that you did not look at America, or did you look at like Indy Lights or some other junior level series there?
Yeah, I think the aim for us have been to try and go the ladder up to F1, you know, and that's what our main aim is. But of course, Kenny have very good contacts in America, and you know, there is always ways there probably if we want to do it. But at the moment, we are focusing to be in Europe and try and go. Go this way, yes.
Well, you ask Kenny a question for me, please. Does he send a Christmas card to Robbie Gordon every year?
I will ask him. I don't know.
You know why I'm asking that?
No, not really, no.
Because when Kenny won the Indy 500, it was Robbie Gordon's race, and I think on the last lap he ran out of petrol.
Really? Is that true?
Yeah, it is very true.
I didn't know that.
so you ask him, hey, do you send Robbie Gordon a Christmas card every year?
I will, yeah.
He'll get a laugh out of it. Okay, GP2, final frontier before the promised land of Formula One. You are with Supernova. Another crazy guy, David Sears, comes into the picture. I like both him and Dutton. How did you choose this team?
Oh, I think it's a great team, and also it's they have a great history of success. As well, my manager Kenny Brack is previously raced with Supernova in the 90s when he did Formula 3000. So we have a great relationship with David and also other quite a lot of guys in the team. So because of that, it was a natural choice, and I'm really, really happy that we did it.
You were in the GP2 Asia Series. What is your assessment of the car versus what other cars you have driven and the drivers in GP2, because now you are in dog-eat-dog world?
Yeah, I mean, the GP2 car is extremely extremely tough to drive, and it's very, very quick, and they have a lot of power. So it's a big difference compared to F3, I would say, because you have to drive it in a different way. You need to use the brakes in the best possible way. You need to get on the throttle in the best possible way. So it's quite different to F3, I would say, but it's bloody good fun to drive.
No, you're saying it's very difficult to drive. Why is it difficult apart from the speed factor?
I think it's just because it's so much, you know, you go a lot quicker, and the details is a lot harder to get, you know, because you are traveling a lot quicker. And then also, you know, the competition in GP2 is just extremely hard, you know. It's so easy to be 22nd or 24th, you know. It's so easy. You don't have to, if you have a bad day, you are there, you know. It's everyone in here is extremely talented, and to be up in the front is very, very hard.
Is Kenny putting any pressure on you, dude? You have to win, or I send you back to Japan?
No, not really, I wouldn't say. Of course, you know, he wants me to do well, but it's not a pressure, you know. You know, in the most sport, it's always a pressure from people around, but it's not that I feel that I'm under pressure, I wouldn't say, no.
And now, what is the goal you have set for yourself for this season?
It's a difficult one. I haven't set like a specific goal, to be honest, but you know, I think we can be doing well, and I think we can have good weekends, and hopefully be up there fighting for good positions. But I don't want to say a specific goal, really. You know, I think the most important is to learn and do well, you know, and progress during the year.
Motor racing was very popular in your country. Even Ronnie Peterson was racing. How much interest there is in motor racing right now in the career of Marcus Ericsson in your country, and do you get good media coverage?
I think it's growing most sport interest, because as you say, when Ronnie was racing in the 70s, and he was very, very big in Sweden, you know, it was a big, big sport. But then when Ronnie died, you know, it was a big tragedy, and we were the interest was going down a bit. And also now it was 20 years since it was the last Formula One driver from Sweden, you know, when Stefan Johansson was driving. So I think the interest has been down the last 15 years or so, but now it's getting up more and more, because I can see as well, you know, this is quite good media for myself, and also I have my blog, you know, and it's a lot of readers and a lot of interested and a lot of fans, so it's great, you know, and it makes me just want to push even harder and want to do even better, you know.
Now, here's the most important question. When you are an established Formula One star, can I sit down here and have a chat with you again?
If I am, yes, of course.
You are on record now. I really appreciate your time, Marcus. Finally, how about a message to listeners of F1 Weekly? We have listeners all over the world, including your country.
Yeah, I mean, I hope they will watch the races from this weekend and the rest of the year, and I hope they will see a good show, because I'm sure GP2 will give that, and I'm going to be part of it. So I will push all I can and hopefully have a good year.
Okay. Thank you very much, man.
Marcus, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.